sometimes there's a real fear that if I don't do it this way, my kids won't find my home interesting and then I might lose them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if Patrick doesn't get this under control, he and his co-parent are going to be at odds with each other about it for a while.
And that's only going to continue the conflict and stress the kids.
So. Yeah. And her fear, let me tell you, from the other side, I can suspect that mom's fear is that they're going to want to go to dad's all because he's more fun. And she fears the same thing.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I would be afraid of that. Yep.
Yeah. And here she's thinking, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a parent, trying to teach them things. I'm doing what he should be doing, and he's not doing it. He's going to get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
And right. That doesn't feel fair. This is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized, and even agonized occasionally to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day, and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go? Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Good evening, Rick.
Good evening. We finally did an evening one.
Yes. Not by choice.
Right.
So if you hear one of us snoring, it's because it's in the evening now.
Well, this tells our audience that we can do it anytime, anywhere, anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I love about remote kind of working, right? We can dress how we want. We can, you know, be in whatever room we want. People can guess. I wonder what room they're in when they're doing this. Don't let your imagination run away from you. So,
okay.
I just want to explain to our listeners how we choose questions, because we get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions on social media. And of course, I always, if I see a question I like or I see a post that I like, I always ask for permission. You know, hey, this is a great post. This is a good question. I think our listeners will be interested. Do you mind? And so how do we sort through them? And I think I have personal favorites. I try not to choose them because they're dramatic, you know, or exploit them because they have really interesting details. But I do think our listeners want interesting details. But this particular email that we're going to talk about today, one of the reasons I really liked it is because it was rare. This is from a dad who's actually saying, I think I screwed up. And this is what I've been doing for all these years. And now I'm worried I've done the wrong thing. Mm. And I really, my heart went out to him because I thought, yeah, we probably should address this because I don't think that he's alone. I think a lot of dads, especially because there are more non-custodial dads than there are non-custodial moms, but anybody, moms or dads that have non-custodial time, struggle with a lot of different emotions that I think custodial parents might not be as in tune with. So this is from Patrick, and he says, I've been listening to your show and you seem to take a fair perspective about most things. I just wanted to check in with you about something that has been bugging me. I see my kids every other Thursday through Monday. They are 10 and 12, and we've been divorced for 2 years. They are good kids, but I admit I don't require much of them when they are with me. I feel guilty about the divorce, and I have them for so little time that I wanted to always feel happy to them when they're here. But their mom gets upset with me when they go back to their house and are rude to her when she asks them to do chores or to go to bed on time. Apparently, they tell her they want to live with me, which makes me feel good. But part of me knows it's because I have no rules. And we just all do whatever we want on the weekends when they're here. I was not raised like this. And even my own mother scolds me for not having a more structured household when my kids are around. Now I'm afraid if I start disciplining them and having rules, they will not want to visit me anymore because of how I started this whole weekend dad thing. Do you have any advice about being a better parent without upsetting my kids to the point that they don't want to come over? I love them so much and I feel stuck. And that just pulled at my heartstrings because, you know, Wow. The fact that he's admitting, and I don't think, like I said, I don't think this is uncommon.
No.
That, you know, kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, I just want to enjoy the heck out of my kids when they're here. And I want to start with saying I have a lot of empathy for non-custodial parents who, when they get the kids, they just want to fill it packed full of stuff that I've missed for, you know, the last 2 weeks. And how can we make up for lost time? And unfortunately, you really can't. You know, time is time and it passes.
Yeah.
And you only have, you know, he has a Thursday through Monday, which at least he has a full weekend. He has Friday, Saturday, Sunday, full days with them, which is great. But still, that's what, 3 days every 2 weeks. And you could understand, and I was not the non-custodial parent, so I could understand, though, if I put myself in his shoes, how hard it would be just to try to structure that time and still feel like you're packing in everything you want to do with them to make memories.
Right.
You know, do you want to speak to that, Rick, from, you know, maybe some personal experience?
Well, oftentimes in our relationships with our spouses, we kind of divvy up the discipline and the nurturing. And it's a team sport. And he may have been the nurturer in the relationship to begin
right.
with.
Sure. Absolutely.
But when you're no longer in that relationship, then one of you may have to step up and learn to do the other half of that equation.
Right. Right. And I also have heard from non-custodial parents this grief roller coaster that you pretty much go through for many, many years. When your kids leave to go back to the other house, there's sort of a downward spiral of, oh, you know, now I feel lonely again, or I feel bad that I'm going to miss my kids for the next, you know, several days or weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And then as it starts to build up toward the time you're going to see them again, your spirits start to rise again. Oh, I'm so excited. In 3 more days, I get to see the kids, and 2 more days and 1 more day. And then you're with them and you're like, high as a kite. Yeah, I'm with my children. And then round about Sunday, you start feeling that dread, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. They're leaving me tomorrow and I'm going to miss them for the next, you know, whatever time. And they describe it as never really going away. There's just this sort of roller coaster of emotion that they go through consistently. They learn how to cope with it, but it's just always there, you know, and that has to be really difficult. I just want to acknowledge right off the bat that that is difficult. That's painful for any parent to go through because it feels unnatural to them. That's not how you naturally spend time with your kids. It's court ordered yes. and it's structured, but it doesn't feel natural.
No. Yeah, nobody's going to spend, you know, Wednesday night being all excited that, all right, the kids are coming over and we're going to paint the house or we're going to cut the grass.
Right.
That's exactly. just not natural.
Although I think it sounds like Patrick understands that those things are important to teach children, you know, work ethic and to be disciplined and structured and to abide yeah. by rules or have standards that you need to meet and that kind of thing. But at the same time, the emotional side of him says, but then they might not think this is such a great place to come.
Yeah.
So I want to acknowledge that it's painful. And I also want to acknowledge Patrick for kind of being able to be man enough to admit this and say, yeah, this is not easy. And what I want to do, I'm afraid to do. Because what would happen if they didn't want to come anymore? Would it be worth it? You know,
that would be hard. Yes. If one day I don't want to come back anymore because you have rules, that would be hard to take.
And then there's mom. She feels like the scapegoat, right? Like, okay, well, I'll just let her teach all the rules and I'll be over and having all the fun. I'm sure that's how it feels to mom.
Yep.
But I really want our custodial parents to hear this because that's really not what he's thinking. He's not thinking, well, I'll just shirk my responsibilities because she's willing to do it. And then I can just take all the fun. Mm-hmm. It really is a fear that if my kids don't have a good time here, like it here, it's not pleasant here, especially as they get older, they're going to be like, what's the point of going over there? So I first want to say to Patrick, do not underestimate your relationship with your kids.
Uh-huh.
Presumably in the 10 or 12 years that you've known them, you have developed a bond with them. You say, I love them so much, you know, and I believe you. So that means that your kids do have a bond with you. I would be careful about not putting so many marbles in this basket of fear
right.
that you have.
Yeah.
You know, what if I don't make it all fun, they won't want me anymore. Not necessarily true. Now, I do have a caution for non-custodial parents who want to just be the fun time parent. and it works for a little while. But if you have no rules, you have no standards, you don't hold them accountable to anything, it's so starkly different. It is common that they just want to be there for that. And it's not you.
Yeah.
It's not their love for you. It's that, you know, and that's really not what you want to be the focus of your relationship. But more than that, what you'll learn is when they get old enough where you feel like you have to set boundaries for their safety. Okay, they're 15 now and they're going out with their friends and you say you have a 10 o'clock curfew and they look at you like you're nuts. Like, huh?
Right.
You never set a rule for the last 10 years. Now you're going to tell me I have a curfew? I don't think so. And that's probably what's going to make them not want to come back.
Right. Right.
Because if you perpetuate this, hey, come to dad's where there's nothing expected of you other than fun, that sounds good, but in the end will probably cause you to lose them because they will disrespect you as a parent because you haven't put yourself in the role of a parent.
Right.
They're going to think of you as a buddy.
Yes, 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 yes.
And friends don't tell friends what to do. And I thought we were friends. Now you're right. Telling me what to do. Gee, maybe I don't want to be your friend anymore. And then they'll stop coming over because, well, now it's ceased to be fun. But at 10 and 12, Patrick, you have a great opportunity now before we get into those more difficult years to say, you know, I've been thinking the divorces, you know, happened a couple of years ago and, you know, I've kind of been loose around the rules, just trying to get adjusted to things. But now that we're kind of adjusted to the schedule, I would like us to have a little more structure. I wouldn't say, I think it's time for me to discipline you and make rules. You'll get very sad faces. I think a unique way to talk about it would be, hey, you know, I think if we had more structure, it would give us more time to do things, you know, because when you don't have any structure, you just kind of laze around until 3 o'clock and then it's too late to do maybe something productive and then you just kind of do nothing. You know?
Yeah.
If we structure things and get all the chores done in the morning and we plan something like mowing the lawn or washing the car or something for the weekend, we get that out of the way. And then you teach them work first, play next, you know? And so if you make it inviting to them, then it shouldn't be a drudgery, you know?
Right.
It's just, yeah, this is what, and you add, you know, as a postscript, and that will teach you a little bit about how to do things. You know, when you get to be older, I want you to know how to cut the lawn, or I want you to know how to weed the garden, or I want you to know how to do basic things around the house, vacuum and things. Cause when you get to be on your own, you're going to need to know that. They'll just roll their eyes at that one, but that will help you verbalize for yourself what the point of all this is.
Well, and right now I think he's making a mistake of looking at it as an either or. That it's either all discipline or it's all fun.
Okay.
But what you just described is a structured way to do both, because those are the life lessons you're going to have to learn, how to structure your own time and how to get your responsibilities done and also how to have fun.
Right. So I think it would be also good to talk about the importance of discipline.
Mm.
Discipline's kind of like the word diet. It really gets a bad rap.
Yes.
We need a euphemism for discipline. You know, the euphemism for like a diet is eating plan.
Oh, yeah.
Or like the word budget. Everybody hates the word budget.
Right.
If we called it a spending plan.
Uh-huh. Well, now you're just trying to trick me into doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. If you think of the root Latin word of the word discipline, is similar to the word disciple, which is follow in teaching and to be taught. The word discipline is really about teaching. So, and when we discipline, we're kind of holding somebody accountable. So I want to call discipline our accountability plan.
Okay. I could see that. Okay. Yeah.
is that working? You know?
Well, yeah, because accountability isn't, I mean, we're accountable to our friends and the people that we care about. There's just this dynamic about it that sounds positive.
So accountability is really about building trust. You know, if we're accountable to one another, you and I are accountable to one another, that we pick a time each week for us to sit down and record these shows.
Right.
And if I showed up 45 minutes late to each one, and then that made you late for your next appointment, you would stop trusting me.
True.
Right. So we're accountable to one another for, you know, time management, or I might be accountable to my husband for how we spend the money, so that, you know, and vice versa, he's accountable to me. So being accountable in relationships is just something all kids need to learn, right?
Right, right.
So it's kind of the way to present that is, I'm accountable to you, and then it's my job to teach you things and be, you know, in a respectful way. And you're accountable to me in doing the things that I ask you to do in order to teach you, and doing them with a respectful attitude. And when we both do that, I achieve my goal as a parent, and you achieve your goal of getting me to trust you, because all kids want to be trusted, right?
Yeah.
You know, they always say, "You don't trust me." And I talk to parents of teens about this all the time, you know, that it's a weaning process. As soon as they get in high school, you can count on it just being crazy for you and worrisome. And then they get their driver's license, and then you worry some more, and they're on social media, and you're worrying again. And next thing you know, you just want to put them in a box and lock it until they're 18, right? Because you're so worried.
Right.
When what you really need to do is, you know, there should be a relationship between trust and accountability. In other words, if the child proves that they can be accountable to the rules and to the standards you set in place and the way that they handle their phone and the chores you ask them to do, then that should equal more trust on your end. There's a relationship between trust and freedom.
Absolutely.
So the more I trust you as a parent, the more freedom I'm liable to give you. And then when you do something that makes me think, maybe you're not quite there yet, or you haven't reached the maturity for that much responsibility, then I might pull back a little bit. Doesn't mean I trust you less. It just means you need to be held a little bit more accountable before I can give you more freedom. And that's just what we call the parenting box. You know, as the box expands, the freedom expands, then the trust expands. And we hope that the box is so big when you leave my house at age 18 that you just open the door and walk out. It's not a big shock. You're not walking into a shocking place, because you have earned a lot of trust and through your accountability and a lot of freedom along the way. And now the world's not going to be so scary to you. If that makes sense.
Yeah. You get to see in bite-sized pieces how the world works.
Right. Yep. And if you give your child no freedom and you're such a rigid disciplinarian, that's a problem too. You know, because then the child is kind of kept in this little tight box all of their life, and you homeschool them. And I'm not saying anything bad about homeschool, but if you homeschool them and never expose them to the world, and they only have these certain friends, and you don't let them out of your sight until they're 18, what do you think happens to them when they go to college? You have to be a helicopter parent, because they're going to be useless.
Yeah. They're not going to know what to do.
I was never allowed to make a mistake.
Yep.
I was never allowed to have any freedom to do anything wrong or to make my own choices. And now I'm kind of paralyzed.
Oh, that's scary.
I almost need my parent right next to me in order to know what I need to do next. So we don't want that either. We don't want wayward children that have no discipline, and we don't want kids that are so disciplined they have no ability to make their own choices.
Right.
Again, you know how you and I like to talk about continuums, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These are the extremes, the polarized extremes. So what does the middle look like? And that's what we call the authoritative parent. They're not too harsh, but they're not too loose. They actually is freedom within boundaries. And I let you know very clearly what the boundaries are. And as you show me you can handle them, then I expand the boundaries. And the more you develop that accountability to me and the rules and the all that I'm putting in place, the more I'm going to trust you. And then it makes it easy for me to expand the box. So that's really the purpose behind discipline or an accountability plan. Uh-huh. So if you are always saying, "You better not do that, or I'm going to take your phone away. You better not do that, or I'm going to ground you for a month. You better not do that, or I'm going to put you in your room and never let you out." And then they do it, and you don't respond in the way you said you would, what have you taught your child?
You're not to be trusted. That you're not, you failed the accountability because you're not keeping your word.
Yeah. You're not accountable to the rules that you set. So it's a two-way street.
Yep.
You know, don't threaten something that you can't follow through with, because you're really risking the trust.
Yes.
You have to be accountable to your rules. They have to be accountable to the rules. And so I want you to think of it this way. If your child has said this, or they say this to their friends, or sometimes they say this to their therapist, because I've heard it before. Yeah, my mom says that, but she never means it. Mm. Yeah. My dad said that. He says lots of things in that. Do you know what that means? That means that they don't trust your word.
Yeah.
Because if I can't trust you in the small things, if I can't trust you in the discipline, if you don't follow through with what you say, then in the bigger things, I'm not going to trust you either. I might not even trust when you say, I love you, that you really mean it.
Wow.
If you say, hey, I've got your back, I'll be there for you. I'm not sure they believe you.
Yeah.
So there's more to this discipline thing than just showing your power.
Right. Making them work. Right.
Right. Unfortunately, a lot of parents do discipline because they get some sense of reward from the power of just, you know, do it because I said so, you know, when really it's a very delicate thing. It's a delicate balance of, you know, really wanting to teach your values of integrity and honesty and, you know, dependability and consistency. Those are all the words of stability. And kids need it. You know, kids going through a divorce, they already feel a little unstable, right? With the two homes and, you know, the unpredictability of mom and dad's conflict and where that will lead and all that.
Yeah.
So there's already kind of one strike against you when you have a divorced family. So you need to be doing everything you can to create stability in your home and that sense of safety and security emotionally and all of that, because, you know, they may not necessarily feel that because of the family situation.
Yeah, makes sense. Usually when we're talking about the relationship between the two co-parents.
Right.
Where somebody's done something and the other parent's stuck. But this is Patrick talking about he's done it and he's stuck. Mm-hmm. But what we're talking about here, we want both parents to do regardless of what the other parent is or is not doing.
Sure. And in some ways, I'm siding with Patrick because I want all of those parents out there who think I do all the work and the other parent does nothing. I want you to kind of see another side of this. There could be a possibility that your co-parent is parenting out of fear instead of parenting in confidence, you know.
Yeah.
And that it's not necessarily because they're just lazy and they want to have a good time. Sometimes there's a real fear that if I don't do it this way, my kids won't find my home interesting and then I might lose them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if Patrick doesn't get this under control, he and his co-parent are going to be at odds with each other about it for a while.
And that's only going to continue the conflict and stress the kids out.
Yeah. And her fear, let me tell you, from the other side, I can suspect that mom's fear is that at 14 or whatever age in whatever state they live in, that kids can kind of, you know, talk to the court and make a decision about where they want to be. They're going to want to go to dad's.
Right.
All because he's more fun. And she fears the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I would be afraid of that. Yep.
Yeah. And here she's thinking, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a parent, trying to teach them things. I'm doing what he should be doing, and he's not doing it. And he's going to get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel fair.
It's not fair.
And like we say, life ain't fair. But yeah, so I just want everyone listening to think of these two sides and think about where you fall within that. And it's really hard in any divorce situation for both parents to be equally the same as far as their parenting styles and strategies go. That's rare.
Right.
I mean, it does happen, but it's pretty rare. And so you have to be able to accept the other parent's style of discipline, but we certainly do want to see that they have a style, right?
Right.
Not that they do nothing or they don't promote anything or they don't ask the kids to be anything acceptable at their home, you know, and that's really frustrating.
And for me, I had to learn the nurturing side. I mean, maybe both parents can do it, but one's usually more competent at it or more comfortable with it than the other. I was not comfortable with the nurturing side. I had to work hard
really?
On that side. Yeah.
So you were just that hard dad who just set the rules and said, do it because I said so?
That's for many years, I started out that way.
I have a hard time believing that, Rick. You just seem so mild-mannered and calm now. I just can't imagine you being like, go to your room. Take out the garbage. Do the dishes. Shut up.
I've worked very hard on me. Well, you know that picture that you see on my Zoom?
Yeah.
It says, I've already lost touch with a couple of people I used to be. That's what that refers to.
That's where that comes from. Okay.
Yes. I'm no longer that person anymore.
Well, kids have a great way of teaching us to be better, don't they?
Right. That's the motivation.
Yeah.
Do it and get it right.
Exactly. So I want to tell Patrick to hold on to this obvious love, unconditional love you have for the children. You know, hold on to that because they need that. And I can feel it in your message that you do have a genuine concern about them. But let go of this idea. Let go of this fear that if I don't make it fun, my kids won't want to be with me. I mean,
no.
Parenting is never about fun.
No.
You know, my dad didn't make anything fun for me, but I respected him and later on learned to love him in a very personal and emotional way. So it's not about fun. I mean, fun is something we hope everybody has, but that doesn't really teach them anything about life.
No, life's not all about fun.
Most of the time in life, we're doing very mundane, necessary things. And
yes.
We hope we can have fun at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, good job.
Yeah.
We're proud of you for that honesty and that self-awareness.
Sure.
And wanting to improve.
Right.
I can definitely understand that desire to improve.
Right. And probably another lesson is if you want to ask us a question and you really want us to talk about it on the air, then spend the whole time blaming the other parent. I'm probably going to pass over that one. I want to hear that you're really one of those non-impossibles, that you have a little bit of insight into your own behavior, and that makes the question a lot more interesting, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good question. Again, we want to hear from you all, so
yes.
Email us or visit our Non-Impossible Facebook page. We'd love to hear what your dilemmas are.
Indeed.
All right. Good to see you. Talk to you next week.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.